There is no need to be hacking.
It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Nepal's earthquake death toll approaches 7,400 as international relief efforts increase. Nepal's government says the death toll from the April 25th earthquake has risen to nearly 7,400 after the bodies of 100 people, including several foreigners, were found following an avalanche near a popular trekking route in Lang Tong, some 60 kilometers north of Kathmandu. Another 14,000 are known to have been injured following the 7.8 magnitude quake and aftershocks. U.S. helicopters are supporting international relief efforts, airlifting supplies to remote communities. Bill Berger is with the U.S. Agency for International Development.
It's going to be very difficult. It's difficult in the best of times in Nepal. Every year it's a mountainous country. Every year parts of the country get cut off. But if we can move our air assets out and get the supplies that we have out quickly, we can get people provisioned before the onset of the monsoon.
Nepal's home ministry said the U.S. aircraft will also airlift victims out of remote areas that suffered from the worst devastation. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in Nairobi Monday announced $45 million in new aid to assist Kenya and the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees with the care of hundreds of thousands of mostly Somali refugees.
This funding is part of our effort to maintain our longstanding commitment and Kenya's longstanding commitment to be able to provide haven to refugees. What this money will mean is better schools. It means access to health clinics. It means safer housing and clean water to drink. And it will benefit not only refugees, but also particularly the Kenyan communities who graciously act as hosts.
Mr. Kerry also vowed support in Kenya's battle against the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab, which has claimed responsibility for a series of deadly cross-border attacks. This is VOA News. Waves of migrants risking the Mediterranean for Europe continues. Italian officials struggling to find ways to care for nearly 7,000 more refugees rescued at sea over 3 days ending Monday. Carlotta Sami is a spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
Of course, it's a struggle. It's a daily struggle, in particular when so many people arrive in 1 day or 2 days. We are speaking about almost 7,000 people in a weekend. So the system is, of course, under pressure.
Authorities say at least 10 migrants drowned over the past few days as they attempted to escape chaotic Libya for a more stable life in Europe. Following a series of shipwrecks that killed more than 1,200 in April, European leaders last month agreed to strengthen the EU presence at sea, deciding to triple the previous $3.4 million each month funding for the operation run by its Frontex border agency. The Nigerian military Monday said troops killed at least 28 suspected militants during a weekend operation in Central Plateau State following the killing and mutilation of 6 Nigerian soldiers. The army denies firing indiscriminately at civilians. One local ruler, however, says as many as 80 people, some women and children, were killed by the soldiers. Plateau State is in Nigeria's so-called Middle Belt, where the mainly Christian South meets the majority Muslim North. The area has been plagued by sectarian violence in recent years, although there are concerns the Islamist militant group Boko Haram has been involved in some of those attacks. Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé was sworn in Monday to a third five-year term following a contested April 25 election that secured his family's rule of the tiny West African nation to 48 years. Opposition candidate Jean-Pierre Fabre, who came in second, denounced the election as fraudulent, but said he would not contest the result. The country's highest court Sunday ratified the election result. Afghan officials have confirmed that at least 16 soldiers are dead and more than a dozen wounded after a Taliban attack in northeastern border region. An unspecified number of soldiers are missing after the assault late Sunday in the remote Badakhshan province. The Taliban insurgents reportedly seized weapons, several tanks, and vehicles. Early Monday, at least 2 civilians were killed and 20 others were wounded by a suicide bomber in Kabul. The Taliban claimed responsibility for both attacks. The attacks came a day after Afghan peace activists and elders concluded unofficial discussions in Qatar in the latest effort to end Afghanistan's longest war. Once again, the hour's top story. Nepal's government says the death toll from the April 25th earthquake has risen to nearly 7,400 with the discovery of 100 bodies following an avalanche north of Kathmandu. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry discusses security and counterterrorism with Kenyan officials.
The even larger imperative is to persuade and prevent people, particularly young people, from joining such groups as Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, and Daesh.
Zimbabwe nurses boycott working the night shift and demand more pay. The United States supports the creation of a hybrid court for South Sudan, but the Juba government says setting up such a court will impede the ongoing but elusive peace process.
The secretary is putting the cart before the horse. In actual fact, talking about accountability so early at this stage is a complicating factor in reaching peace in South Sudan.
Michael Makui is South Sudan Information Minister, and experts meet to discuss reducing risks from hazardous chemicals and waste through sustainable management. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. and Kenyan officials have discussed ways to broaden counterterrorism strategies in the wake of Islamist militant attacks in East Africa. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has the story from Nairobi.
A month ago, an Al-Shabaab attack on students and teachers at Kenya's Garissa University College killed nearly 150 people. After talks in Nairobi with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and other officials, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry offered condolences and said border security and law enforcement were only part of the equation in fighting terrorists.
The even larger imperative is to persuade and prevent people, particularly young people, from joining such groups as Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, and Daesh.
Kerry said a successful strategy to defeat groups like Al-Shabaab depends on building trust between authorities and local communities.
That includes members of Kenya's Muslim community who were among the first to march against the terrorists in Garissa. And it also includes Somali refugees in Kenya who are here, after all, because they fled from and despise Al-Shabaab.
But Kenya has to ensure it is adopting approaches to confront Al-Shabaab that do not alienate members of its communities, says longtime U.S. diplomat Johnny Carson, a former U.S. ambassador to Kenya.
It has to be sharp, laser-like, and surgical. The country should be careful not to alienate its Muslim citizen population, who contribute so much to the diversity, vitality, and health of Kenya.
The U.S. has provided training and equipment to missions to fight Al-Shabaab and also carried out drone strikes in the region. But a military defeat of the group would not mean a total defeat, says the Atlantic Council's Africa Center Director, Peter Fong.
The movement has transformed itself from less a territorial entity seeking to control parts of Somalia into a transnational terrorist entity, which has to be fought not with purely military means, but also police, intelligence, and also social, economic, and political development and inclusion.
While in Kenya, Kerry also announced Washington would contribute an additional $45 million to support United Nations refugee operations in Kenya. Some Kenyan officials have expressed concern that Al-Shabaab has used the country's Dadaab refugee camp to launch attacks in Kenya. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the Obama administration supports the creation of a hybrid court to try those responsible for mass killings and other human rights violations in the South Sudan conflict. The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch proposed the idea last December to include international and domestic judges similar to the Special Court of Sierra Leone. In an exclusive interview Monday in Nairobi with the Juba-based iRadio, Mr. Kerry said the United States will provide $5 million to kickstart the process.
In very practical terms, I announced today that we are putting $5 million into the effort to develop a justice and accountability system for what is happening in South Sudan. We believe that these terrible, atrocious things that are happening to people, the rapes, the killings, the disappearances, the level of violence is really
questionably a violation of the laws of warfare. And we need to have accountability as this goes forward. But much bigger than that, we need to bring this war to an end. There are 2 million people who have been displaced. Mothers are burying their children. Young women are being raped in camps. The level of slaughter of innocent victims, innocent civilians, is simply unacceptable by any standard whatsoever. And the leaders, Salva Kiir, the president, and Riek Machar, who need to come to their senses. They need to sign an agreement that's real, and they need to stop allowing the people to be the victims of their power struggle. And I believe that the nations in the community, Ethiopia, Uganda, Kenya, the IGAD as a whole, all of them need to come together and make certain that there's going to be an impact here. And that could mean sanctions against the individuals, not against the country, but against individuals who have hidden money away, hidden property away, who have literally stolen from the nation, even as they're letting the nation kill itself. This is unacceptable.
A leaked report by the African Union Commission of Inquiry also called for holding to account those responsible for atrocities in the South Sudan conflict. But South Sudan's government says releasing the report would impede the ongoing but elusive peace process. Secretary Kerry said the United States supports the release of the report.
Well, I'd like to see exactly what that peace process is and precisely what it would do to impede it before, making that judgment. I think ultimately there has to be accountability. And I don't necessarily share the view that that would prevent it. But if I have a plan in front of me that shows that we can really make peace and really stop the violence and really move this process forward, and that was somehow going to stop that, I'd see where we are. But in principle, there should be full disclosure. There should be full accountability. A report should be made public. And, you can't hide atrocities.
Mr. Kerry said the U.S. has been and will continue to be involved in efforts to move the South Sudan peace process forward.
Well, you've heard me be pretty declarative in this interview that we are fed up with this avoidance of responsibility by the so-called leaders of this conflict on both sides. And it is time for people to act responsibly. What is happening is disgraceful. It is destroying not just the region, not just the country, but it is doing huge damage to the region. It's very disruptive, and it slows down the progress of efforts to fight back against al-Shabaab, against other terrorist entities. It helps create more extremists, actually. So it works against everybody's interest. And the Troika is going to push very hard. The UN, the United States, Great Britain, the EU, all of us are going to push very hard for some real decision-making in these next days.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking in an exclusive interview with the Juba-based iRadio. The Secretary of State appealed to South Sudan President Salva Kiir and former Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar to come together in the interest of peace and stop using their people as pawns. South Sudan's government says the call to create a hybrid court to try those responsible for mass killings and other human rights violations in the South Sudan conflict is counterproductive to attaining peace. This comes as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the United States supports the idea and is willing to provide $5 million to kickstart the process. But South Sudan's Information Minister Michael McQuay says setting up such a court at this time will impede the ongoing but elusive peace process.
This is a very unfortunate statement at a time when we are actually in search of peace. I say it is unfortunate because we are not against whatever that will be done, but that should be after achievement of peace. Because there is no way you would hold anybody responsible and accountable at this moment when you have not yet achieved peace. The most appropriate situation would have been to work for peace first, bring peace, and after peace, then you make people accountable. Now it seems that the secretary is putting the cart before the horse. In actual fact, talking about accountability so early at this stage is a complicating factor in reaching peace in South Sudan. Mr. Minister,
you can understand the frustration with Secretary of State John Kerry and the frustration with the international community. You, the government of South Sudan, and the rebels have been unable to reach any agreement.
Well, it is not a question of not being unable, because negotiation for peace is not an event. It is a process. And it is unfortunate that people are very fast in reaching conclusions and saying that the parties have failed to reach an agreement. If they had failed, we would have not been continuing talking. So we have not failed in reaching peace, but we are in the process of it.
So how long can the international community wait? How long can the process continue?
It will continue until we reach peace. There is no way whereby, unless people are, if we are realistic and we are looking at issues objectively, there is no way people would say, you must agree on this date. Otherwise, people have other ultra objectives other than bringing peace to South Sudan.
So, Mr. Minister, do you agree that perhaps the African Union is on board with this kind of report? Because there was a leaked African Union report that made reference to something like this. Do you agree?
Well, of course, the African Union and the IGAD are trying their level best, and it is within their competence to ensure that peace is reached in South Sudan. What I'm surprised about is that there are some other institutions which are even trying to impose some of their positions or opinions on IGAD and on the African Union. The process is now in the hands of IGAD, and from the hands of IGAD, it will go to the African Union, and it is the African Union that will thereafter take it to the UN.
It's the government of South Sudan and the rebels. Are you running out of time? Because it seems to me the international community is on one side and you both are on one side.
We are not running out of time. We are negotiating. There is no time frame. And those who want us to reach a hasty peace, a peace that will not be durable, are the people who want us to reach peace within the shortest possible peace. For us, we are in search of a durable and lasting peace, as a peace that will be sustainable. It's not a question of signing a peace agreement because people want peace. That is not a solution.
I said that because it seems to me you are becoming isolated.
We are not becoming isolated, but there are certain interested groups that want to ensure that South Sudan is isolated.
Who are you referring to?
I'm referring to anybody who wants to force us to reach peace by any possible means.
Michael McQuay, South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 5th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to our affiliates on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monroeville, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon, and our VOA frequency station in Abidjan, the Ivory Coast. Daybreak Africa time is 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Some nurses in Zimbabwe are boycotting night shift duties, insisting they need higher allowances and better working conditions. Enoch Dongo, chairperson of the Harare chapter of the Nurses Association of Zimbabwe, says they decided to take the action because the government has over the years failed to address their issues.
I want to put this thing very straight. Nurses are not on strike. Nurses are only boycotting night duty. Reason being that they are being paid $3 after working 7 days of night duty. And I think that is actually a mockery. So they are demanding a review of that night duty allowance. And also they are also complaining of regrading. Nurses are in the wrong grade. They were supposed to be regraded in 2010, January. Up to today, nothing has happened. And we understand the government has budgeted that money for in 2010 because there was a procedure which was supposed to be followed to put those nurses in those grades.
When you say that nurses are boycotting the night shift, what exactly do you mean? Are they leaving the job at a certain time in the day?
Yes, they are working from 7 to 4.
And why are nurses boycotting this issue? What do they want to be paid? As you're saying that they're only being given $3 for a 7-day night shift.
Yeah, nurses actually requested for $150 US dollar for 7 days worked during the night. since these are antisocial working hours, where everyone will be at home with their families, but the nurses, they will be at work during the night. You know, working during the night is very hectic.
Enoch Dongo is the chairperson of the Harare chapter of the Nurses Association of Zimbabwe. He was speaking from Harare with Tatenda Gombo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Zimbabwe Health Minister David Parirenyatwa says the nurses should end their boycott of the night shift because negotiations to address their grievances are in progress.
The Zimbabwe Nurses Association executive is in deep conversation with the Health Services Board, and we think that they are making progress. And honestly, there's no need to make patients suffer.
The nurses themselves are saying that they have taken this stance because they have been continuing to negotiate without any avail. Will there be some different view this time around?
Negotiations are always negotiations. You don't think that the negotiations bring out anything. They do. So you must always negotiate so that patients do not suffer. That's why there's a health services board. That is its function, to negotiate, to see anomalies, to correct those anomalies, but we should not allow patients to suffer by any conscience.
And on that note, Honorable Parirenyatwa, there are some organizations who are calling, as you're saying, for nurses to return back to the job because of what can happen without them being available.
The nurses are boycotting only night duty. They are working throughout the day and then boycott night duty. And we are saying that is really not acceptable in the sense that you make patients suffer. Patients will have been admitted during the day. They don't have enough cover at night. And that is really unprofessional and unethical. And I am saying that they should really come back to work because their own executive is in deep discussion with the Health Services Board, including Ministry of Health and Ministry of Finance.
That was Zimbabwe Health Minister David Parirenyatwa speaking from Harare with Tatenda Gombo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Over the next 2 weeks, 1,500 participants from 180 countries will seek ways to reduce risks from hazardous chemicals and waste through the sustainable management of these potentially life-threatening substances. The participants also will seek ways to strengthen three international conventions that together form the basis for addressing these global environmental problems. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the site of the conference in Geneva.
The Basel Convention is the most comprehensive international environmental agreement on hazardous and other waste. The Rotterdam Convention deals primarily with the safe international trade of industrial chemicals and pesticides. The Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants is a global treaty to protect human health and the environment from chemicals that remain in the environment for long periods. Every 2 years, parties to these conventions gather to examine new threats and agree on new guidelines and measures for better protecting people from existing and evolving hazardous substances. One of the big issues confronting the conference is what the executive director of the United Nations Environment Program, Achim Steiner, calls a tsunami of e-waste unfolding and rolling out over the world. He says electronic waste is now a very significant part of the world's economic footprint. He warns that failure to recycle the mountains of electronic waste from cell phones, laptops, microwaves, and numerous other products are potentially hazardous to humans and the environment.
And this is under the Basel Convention, one of the focal issues of how to deal with electronic waste, which is now a very significant part of our, first of all, economic footprint, but more important, of our non-recycled waste mountain, and because of the content in a great deal of these electronic pieces of equipment, also potentially hazardous to people and the environment.
In 2001, the Stockholm Convention listed 12 of the most toxic persistent organic pollutants. These so-called dirty dozen pops traveled widely throughout the world and accumulated in the fatty tissues of humans and wildlife with harmful impacts on human health and the environment. The World Health Organization reports 3 million people are poisoned by pesticides every year and that 20,000 of them die, most in developing countries. countries. The meeting will debate the need to phase out the use of DDT, which continues to be used in many developing countries to control malaria. DDT causes a wide range of serious health problems in humans, including breast and other cancers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Hosts Rwanda edged Kenya in sets of 17-25, 25-18, 25-22, 25-27, and 15-7 in a pulsating final at the Zone 5 All-Africa Games men's volleyball qualifier in Kigali on Monday night. Earlier on, Burundi beat Uganda 23-25, 25-19, 25-23, and 25-18 to clinch the bronze medal. Rwanda qualified for men's volleyball at the All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Congo, September. In football, Algerian defending champions Entente Setif, USM Algiers and Mouloudia El Oulma over the weekend achieved an unprecedented landmark in African club football when they qualified for the mini-league phase in the Orange Africa Champions League. Never before have three clubs from the same country advanced to the mini-league phase of the Champions League, which features the continent's top eight teams. The three Algerian clubs are joined by Sudan's El Merrek and El Hilal, Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan, Egyptian newcomers Smouha, and the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in the draws for the mini-league to be conducted in Cairo, Egypt, today, Tuesday. Turning to athletics, Kenyan men's distance medley team completed the relay consisting of 1,200 meters, 800 meters, 400 meters, and 1,600 meters in 9 minutes and 17.20 seconds to claim the silver medal behind the United States of America at the IAAF BTC World Relays in Nassau, Bahamas on Sunday. Nigeria was seventh in women's 4x100-meter relay in 42.99 seconds, while Botswana clocked 3 minutes and 3.73 seconds to place eighth in men's 4x400-meter finals. By virtue of progressing to the finals, Nigeria women's 4x100-meter relay and Botswana men's 4x400-meter relay qualify for the IAAF World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China in August. Staying in Nassau, at the end of the two-day championship, Nigeria won a gold medal while Kenya bagged two silver medals. On the team standings, Kenya is 7th with 14 points, Nigeria 12th with 10 points, and Botswana is 23rd with 1 point. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, May the 5th.
I wish to call on the PDP federal government to find a lasting solution or solutions to the fuel scarcity, aviation scarcity in the economy. Nigeria, an oil-producing country, still complain of scarcity of this substance. Where are we heading? Comrade Mazi Patrick Kodo Krafo, who blows the message at the United States, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That is it for this Tuesday, May 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, the African Union declared 2015 the year of women's empowerment in acknowledgement of the increasing role women are playing in Africa's development. We'll introduce you to women from the African diaspora who will share their personal stories on empowering themselves and their sisters on the continent for Africa's future. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing language influences. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.